Welcome to Creating Sanctuary, a global interview series featuring 21 heroes who are saving animals' lives. I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and the hero that I'm interviewing today is Carol Baskin. She's the founder and CEO of Big Cat Rescue in Tampa, Florida, which is home to more than 70 lions, tigers, leopards, cougars, bobcats, servals, caracals, jaguar, and ocelot. She's working to protect wildcats in the wild by ending the captive trade in them as pets, props, and parts. Welcome, Carol. Thank you for doing the work you do. I'm so happy you could join us.
Thank you so much for having me, Yolanda.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So, first of all, what is a serval and what's a caracal, and where are their native habitats?
You know, those are some of the two lesser-known cats, and they're native to the same areas, which is Africa, Turkey, all around the Middle East area. They live in the same countries, but they live in different habitats. So servals are a very tall, long-legged cat. They look very much like a cheetah with gigantic ears, and they hunt near the riverbeds, and they hang out near, of course, lower areas because of that desire for fish and little aquatic animals. And then the caracals are a little bit smaller. They're shorter legs. They're a beautiful red, if you can imagine an Irish setter. They're the color of an Irish setter. And then they have these very long ears with these big, magnificent tufts on the ends like you would see on a lynx. In fact, some people call them desert lynx. And they hang out where it's a lot drier and up in the higher, more mountainous areas of the same countries.
And so along with the lions, tigers, leopards, and the other cats, how do they end up in your rescue and sanctuary?
Well, there's two different things that really feed into that. And the way the sanctuary started was through four huge rescue missions into fur farms where bobcats, Canada lynx, and Siberian lynx were being killed for their fur. And so once we were able to get all of the cats out of fur farms in the United States with the agreements of the fur farmers that they would never kill cats again for their fur, then other people started calling and saying, hey, would you take my lion? Would you take my tiger? Would you take my serval? Would you take my caracal? So that's when the other thing that feeds into this, which is the private ownership or pet ownership of these animals. But it's not really a pet problem. The problem is people will pay to have their pictures made with a cute little cub. And there are people who will pander to that and tell them that it's for conservation. And they'll say, for $20, you can have your picture made with this cute little tiger cub, and the money's going to conservation, so you can have your picture and feel good about it too. And it's all a lie. None of that goes to conservation. And these people are just constantly breeding these cubs for that use. But then they have no use for them after they're about 4 to 6 weeks old. They get big enough they can take off a finger. And so they give them away to people who ignorantly think that they're going to make a pet out of that animal. So even though they come to us from the pet industry, they start out from that whole cub petting thing.
So for some reason, people think that these wild animals are going to make good pets eventually.
Yeah, you're not dealing with the brightest element of society when they call you up and say, you know, my pet tiger just tried to kill my child.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, it's crazy that we have to even talk about this, but I guess it happens enough that they end up, well, I'm glad they do end up in your sanctuary then at least, right? They have, what kind of an environment do they have with you?
Well, some end up here, and the problem is that we estimate that there are over 200 tiger cubs, just tiger cubs, that are being bred each year for those photo ops, and yet a very few percentage of those are ending up in sanctuaries anywhere, and they're not staying in the facilities where they are, because as soon as they get to be about a year old, it costs about $10,000 per year per cat just for the direct costs, the food and the vet care, not the overhead of the sanctuary. So the people who are making their money pimping out these cubs are not keeping them, and they're not ending up in sanctuaries, so we believe that they're ending up in the black market trade. But the few lucky ones who do end up in accredited sanctuaries, and there's a handful of sanctuaries across the globe that are accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. Those are the lucky few, and I say lucky, but they're stuck in cages for their whole lives, because once they've been born in a cage, they can never be set free. And the sad fact is that they're going to pay with their lives a prison sentence forever because somebody wanted to have their hands on a cub. And the only way we're going to end that is through legislation that bans the private possession of these animals to begin with.
Right. I was going to ask that. Is it actually legal in the U.S. to have a wild animal like that?
There are some states that have no laws whatsoever. Most states have some patchwork of laws. It differs from state to state. And almost all of the states, even who ban it, like in Florida, Florida says you can't have a tiger as a pet. But if you get a USDA license that costs $35 and the application is name, address, and telephone number, and you promise that you're going to display your tiger, then you're considered a business and you can have your tiger. So it's not really any kind of a meaningful deterrent to people getting these animals as pets.
Okay. So leading up to your big project, which I think one of your big projects anyway, is the Big Cat Public Safety Act. Could you talk to us about that and what you're trying to do about this?
We've been working on this bill now for four sessions, I believe. Each session is a two-year session of Congress. And each two-year session, we get more co-sponsors and, this time around, more importantly, more Republicans because they're in the majority. So it's going to have to pass by their standards to pass. But what the Big Cat Public Safety Act would do is ban the private possession of big cats. So people who have them can keep them. It's not going to take away anybody's animal from them, but they can't buy or breed more of them. And it eliminates the cub handling, all of the pay-to-play petting schemes. So it's the only real answer to ending this huge issue of these animals being born, ripped from their mothers when they're only hours old, fed a diet that is insufficient for them, that causes cataracts and fragile bones. And so many of the cats who come here, when we x-ray them for the first time, you know, because they come here limping and such, we x-ray them and we find that they've got these old injuries from broken bones that were never set right, never, you know, they just had to heal on their own. And it's just, it's unbelievable what happens, what these animals are having to pay for people to get what they want. And I think if people knew that, they would not do this. But the people who are pimping these animals out are great con artists. And it's been a slow slog, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I can see people starting now on social media to really be outraged when they see these kinds of photos, especially when celebrities do it. I mean, they just get absolutely bombarded from all around the globe now when they go out and pet cubs. So it's really nice to see that people are starting to get it. It's just been a really long, tough haul. It's been 25 years of trying to wake people up to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And I think social media is actually helping because, yeah, I used to see a lot more photos of people getting their picture taken with lions, even or tigers, even grown tigers. And it turns out that most likely they're sedated in some way in order to be in an enclosure with humans, right?
Right. They're often sedated. And a lot of times they're still mentally cubs. When you see these cats in nightclub acts and circus acts, it looks like the tamer is so powerful because he's surrounded by all of these adult cats. And they're like 2 and 3 year old cats. They're still mentally kittens. And so they're still responding to fear and allowing the trainers to get away with the things that they do. And then once they get big enough that they're like, you know what, I'm not taking this anymore, that's when they get rid of them and they have the next group of youngsters that they can show off with.
Specifically, with the Big Cat Public Safety Act, what's an actionable item that people can do right now, you know, without even leaving their houses? What can they do to help you pass this legislation?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. if they're U.S. citizens, they can go to bigcatact.com. And what that is a site where you would type in your contact information. And we don't share or sell that to anybody. Your information stays private. But when you type that in, it will actually dial your representative, because the software that we use knows based on your address that you typed in who your representative in Congress is. It'll actually dial the phone for you, and all we ask you to say, because it's going to be some aide that picks up the phone, not your congressman, just ask them, say, please ask your boss to champion the Big Cat Public Safety Act. And we have that language right there on the site when you go to bigcatact.com, so you can read it to them if you want to. And if you call, you know, if you're afraid of making a call, because a call is worth like 200 emails, and petitions don't do any good at all. So the calls are really, really important. But if you're shy, you can call after hours and you just get the answering machine. So it's not going to be scary at all. You can just talk to the answering machine.
Great. And it still counts.
Yes.
That's great. So what would you say is the leading cause of big cat abuse, that the reason that you have to rescue them and create a sanctuary for them?
The number one cause of abuse is that people want to get their hands on cubs, and they want to see cute little cubs. And, mm-hmm. you know, every year the zoo has cute little baby animals on display, and people love to go see baby animals, but they don't think about the fact that next year there's more baby animals. So where did last year's baby animals go? And they'll always tell you that they went to another zoo or they went to a wonderful sanctuary, but you'll find if you start really researching it and trying to pin them down on where those animals go, that that's not the case. They end up being sold to brokers, and then the brokers sell them to private owners. So even though the zoos now, you know, years ago they would just sell directly to the private owners, but now they deal with zoo brokers who sell to the public, and that way they can distance themselves from it and say, oh, we don't sell to the public.
And even though you have a sanctuary and run a rescue operation, why do you say that the sanctuaries aren't actually the answer?
They're not the answer because they are just providing a space for animals who have already been abused to be rescued. What we need to do is stop the animals from being abused in the first place. They don't belong in cages. They are not ours. They have their own agenda, and they serve their own place in nature, and we are going to be in a lot of trouble as a planet if we don't preserve the forests where these animals live, because we lose our oxygen source, we lose our water sources, and those top-level predators are what keep the ecosystems healthy. But mm-hmm. unfortunately, the private possession of big cats is what provides a legal, because it's legal to have them, it provides a legal smokescreen for the illegal activities of poaching them, selling their parts for traditional Asian medicines, and now it's not even so much the TCM community, because they have come out against using cat parts.
What community?
The traditional Chinese medicine, TCM.
Oh, okay, traditional Chinese, right.
They've come out against okay. using tiger parts and jaguar parts and animal, you know, exotic or endangered cat parts for their medicines because they serve no real purpose. But because it's been so much a part of the Asian culture, it's now becoming a signal of wealth. And so as you have people that are wealthier than they've ever been in these countries, they want to do the same things they saw rich people do when they were growing up. And what they were doing is, you know, bribes are often paid in tiger bone wine, which is a wine that's made from steeping bones of the tiger in rice wine. And so these are amazingly expensive gifts that you give to people to show that you are of wealth or that you have great respect for them, because the tiger is so rare. And the Chinese are breeding tigers on farms just like you would breed cattle or chickens or other animals here for human consumption. They are breeding them there to use their bones and their derivatives in these luxury items. And they're saying that they're doing that to protect the wild tiger. The problem with that is what it's doing is stimulating demand. And by stimulating demand in poorer sectors, then if you're wealthier or you want to appear wealthier, what you want is the real tiger, the wild tiger. But because there's all of this captive bred tiger part stuff going around, it's impossible when you get caught with any of it to tell what came from the wild or what came from a farm. So that's why I say it creates this smoke screen that is just sucking the wildlife right out of our forests.
Yeah, there were a couple of things that I wanted to follow up on. I know that predators are an important part of any wild area. Can you talk a little bit more about that top-level predator that you were talking about and how they keep the other species healthy?
Yeah, it seems like it would be counterintuitive. You think, well, you know, they're predators. They kill the other animals in the forest, so maybe it would be better if you didn't have big predators in the forest. But the problem is that further on down the food chain, the animals who then begin to thrive because they have no predator, no natural predator, they become overpopulated. And so you have situations where, even here in the United States, where deer are so plentiful that now they're causing so many accidents by running across the roads and getting hit by cars because there's no panthers, no cougars that live in their areas. I say panthers because of the Florida panther. They're not really called panthers. Anyway, because there's no cougars to keep the deer in check, now they're becoming too plentiful. And as they graze, then they graze out all of the plants that keep the soil from washing down into the rivers. And so your rivers become just these muddy, silty mess. And it's not just deer. I mean, the whole food chain all the way down goes through this very unhealthy, unsustainable population growth because it's not being kept in check by the predators who were there for millions of years that kept everything working the way that it should. It's only because of the introduction of man that we have extirpated all of our top predators here in the United States. And we seriously need to turn that around. And it's happening in China, where they have eaten all of the predators out of their forest, that they have all of these problems with mudslides and with their farming. And a lot of the issues that I just recently came back from a film festival, and they were talking about how in Africa, in South Africa, that the farmers actually are having a huge problem with all of these plant-eating animals coming into their farms and completely wiping them out because there's no predators to keep them in check. Same thing in India. There was actually a whole interview done with a guy who was, his son was killed by a tiger, and they said, you know, you must really hate the tiger. And he said, no, we need the tiger because without the tiger, then we lose our farms and we all die. And it's like, well, isn't that just, that just encapsulates the entire planet's problem right there.
That shows incredible wisdom that he doesn't hold this vendetta against the animal that was doing what it does, right?
Right.
Yeah. So if we do pass this Big Cat Public Safety Act here in the States, is there something like this happening in China as well? I mean, is it still legal to trade and to farm these large, beautiful creatures?
Well, it's funny you should ask me this on this particular day because I had to leave a phone call. I can still hear my husband in the other room who is still on this call with the State Department. And what he's talking to them about is the fact that China, whenever we try to negotiate with China to close down their tiger farms, they point back at the United States and they say, at least we know where our tigers are. You don't even know where your tigers are. And we have no credibility on the international stage until we clean up our own mess here at home.
Even more reason for us to pass it.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
And not a minute to lose. Tigers are in so much trouble.
It's shocking, really, what humans have been able to do in terms of throwing wildlife out of balance. What else can people do to end this trade in cats as pets or props and parts? And what is another big project that you're working on?
I think one of the biggest things that each of us can do is call people out on it. If you see somebody posing or posting a photo of them posing with a cute little cub or some wild animal, then, you know, you don't have to be mean, but point out to them that these animals aren't ending up in the wild. They're not serving any kind of conservation value, and let them know the horrible lives that these animals face. We have a whole page about that at bigcatrescue.org/cubs, So if you don't know all of the background on what's going on there, that page can give you everything that you need, all the ammunition you need, or just send them that link. And hopefully we can get people to stop posting those kinds of images. As far as other big projects that we're working on, another huge element of what we do here at the sanctuary is native bobcat rehab and release. So the only cats who can go free are the ones who were actually born in the wild. And I've been doing this since I was 17 years old. We had two bobcat calls yesterday, which was kind of odd. Usually we have like every 2 months or so, but two in one day was really weird. So if a bobcat ends up being hit by a car or shot by a hunter or kittens are found orphaned, then what we can do is bring those cats in, give them a safe place to heal. We have a state-of-the-art rehab facility where each bobcat has 4,600 square feet of space, which is like four times bigger than my house, that they can learn how to hunt and to, you know, practice all of their running and jumping and climbing skills so that they're ready to go back to the wild, and then they can actually be released back to where they came from. So that's our happiest day, is when we can actually release a bobcat back into the wild.
So as little interaction with humans as possible, I'm imagining.
Yes, the rehab part of our facility is on the other side of our lake, totally away from humans. And whenever our keepers go back there to clean the water bowls or take the food out there, they actually dress up in ghillie suits, which makes you look like this big walking tree, so that they don't associate the people with food.
Uh-huh.
That's really hot too in August when it's 100 degrees and you're wearing this tree suit.
I would like to see a video of that, actually. That's fantastic. So back to your sanctuary. So how big is your sanctuary, and what are some of the challenges that you face in running your organization?
We're located on 67 acres in Tampa, Florida, and we're blessed to have wonderful Florida weather. Most of the cats that live here are from, you know, equatorial-type climates. And so they're very well suited for the heat and the rain and all of that here. And because of all of the rain, we have very lush enclosures. I gave a tour to a veterinarian the other day, and he said, you know, I've been to 200 different zoos and many different sanctuaries, and I've never seen anything as lush as your enclosures. How do you do that? And I told him that's actually how we judge whether or not the cage is big enough for the cat. If plants can't live in the cage because the cat's trampling them down, then it's way too small. So we just keep adding on until there's greenery that can survive the cat. And that means that most of the cages for like a bobcat or a serval or a caracal are about 1,200 square feet each. Most of the tigers are in 1,800 to 3,600 square feet. And then we have two vacation areas. So we have a 2.5-acre vacation rotation area that has a big pond in it and fountain. And every 2 weeks, a different lion or tiger gets to go out on vacation and have that for 2 weeks. And then the next cat goes out there. So it's always different smells and different things to do. And the cats, their favorite part of vacation is actually the tunnel system that we've created. It's an above-ground tunnel that takes them from their enclosure to vacation, and they'd rather run up and down those tunnels than do anything else, I think. If I were going to do it all over, I'd just build tunnels everywhere. but we also have a 22,000 square foot space for the smaller cats, the jaguar and cougars and leopards and bobcats and servals and caracals and the hybrids. Mm-hmm. They can go into that area every 2 weeks. So we're always moving cats around every other Thursday.
How do you handle them? How do you move them around? That sounds interesting.
We never touch the cats. We believe that sends the wrong message. They're not ours to touch. In the wild, they would never allow us to touch them. So we have a rule here that if you touch a cat and you get caught, you're thrown off the property and you're never allowed back in. And that's how strongly we feel about people, you know, just reaching down to get that one quick little pet. It's going to cost them their ability to ever come back, because it's just wrong and it's dangerous. A cat could easily kill you. So what we do to move them to and from vacation is we built these tunnels that are, I don't know, they're probably about 4 feet wide and 5 feet tall, and they run all through the sanctuary from cage to cage to cage, and then we have to move cats, shift cats into different areas so that the cats can go through the cage without having a common wall, because there's a cat on vacation right now who came from a facility where they had shared walls, and she lost an ear and her tail, and she had had some really bad damage done to her back leg. You can tell because her stripes don't match up anymore. But here we make sure that they never have the opportunity to hurt each other by having a shared common wall. And we don't put cats together. I see that also done at a lot of facilities because people like, you know, people are primates and they want to see all the cats together. And it's like, cats don't like that. Cats are solitary. They want to share space with each other. So we don't make them live together unless they were like siblings that have always been together. As long as they get along, we'll let them stay together, but we don't make them do that. So we move them that way. And then we have a little area that we feed them in. We call it a feeding lockout, and it has a guillotine door. So every day they get fed and their water bowl is in there. So they get very accustomed coming into that feeding lockout. We can shut the door and then take a carrier in on the other side of the door for the smaller cats and then open the door. And usually they'll go from the light to the dark. So if the carrier is darker, they will duck into the carrier, and that way we can shift them out to the areas if they don't have a tunnel leading there.
You kind of answered my next question, which is about mixing species. It sounds like you don't mix the species, but some cats travel in, what, lions travel in prides, right? So how do you handle, like, if you keep families together, how do you do that?
We have family members who have been together their whole life. We have three tigers who have been together since 1996, and they're still together. We have three cougars who live together. But even with lions, to address your question there, they're only in prides in the wild because they're family groups. So when you get a lion from a drug dealer and you get a lion from some backyard breeder, just because they're lions doesn't mean they want to be together. And we've actually tried over the years, because we were under that mistaken idea that, well, lions like to be in pride, so they must love to be together. Like, no, they do not. First, are you sure to break that up? And you you never want these cats to have to fight for anything, because their lives have been so hard up until the point that we've rescued them that we're never going to have, they're never going to have another bad day once they come here.
Is your place open for visitors, and how do you handle that? Because I know you want to educate the public as well, right?
We're only open for guided tours. We don't believe that the cats would have a quiet, peaceful existence if we were open like a zoo. Because if you've ever been to a zoo, people want to see the animals up and walking around. So they're yelling at them, they're throwing things at them, they're banging on the glass, they're banging on the bars. And that's just never going to happen here. So we do guided tours every day at 3 o'clock, and then on the weekends we have more tours. And we'll take 22 to 25 people out on a tour with a guide and a backup. So the guide will be telling them about the individual cat stories, and the backup makes sure that everybody stays together and that they're not reaching over barricades or throwing sticks or rocks or anything like that. And we only have children under 10 allowed on two of our tours, because it's hard to keep them quiet. And we really want it to be a peaceful experience for our cats. So we do have the guided tours. And then at the end of the guided tour, it takes about an hour and a half, then we take them to a box that is 16 feet by 20 feet, which is about the size of a parking space. And Florida claims to have some of the most humane laws in the country when it comes to how much space is required for exotic animals. That parking space, the state of Florida says that you can keep two adult tigers, which can be 500 to 700 pounds each. You can keep two tigers in that space for their entire life. Oh, and when people step into that box and they realize how little space that is, and what a horrible prison sentence that is for these animals, then we take them right inside and ask them to make what we call the call of the wild, to call their member of Congress through the BigCatAct.com. And we've had over 5,000 people do that since we started doing the call to action. This was a new thing that we started this past year, so we're really excited about the number of people willing to do that at the end of their tour.
What an amazing experience that would be. God, I can't imagine. Like the size of a bathroom or smaller, that you'd have to live your whole life in that. And you're an animal that wants to run and chase and leap. And
even the big zoos, you know, people think, well, I've seen this huge multi-million-dollar display at the zoo. But the zoos are in the business of displaying animals, and people want to see animals up and moving around. And if it's not easy, but if you are ever able to get a tour of what they call the night house, you'll find that they'll have 4 to 6 tigers in that size cages inside in the dark, and they get let out maybe once or twice a week into that big space. So you're seeing different cats when you go to the zoo. But it's their only day to be outside and be able to walk around. So they're walking around and they're doing what the public wants to see them do. So even at the best zoos, they're keeping them very frequently in these horrible little jail cells behind the scene.
Right. So it's important to distinguish when we go to see an animal, it's important to distinguish, is this place for me to see the animal, or is this place for the animal to live out its life? And I think, you know, that's a good question that we can ask ourselves. And as we travel around the world, too, and, you know, like in Thailand and, you know, get offers to see or interact with these beautiful beings, like, I think we all have to ask ourselves, is this for me or is this for the animal, right?
Yeah. What kind of price is that animal paying for me to have this experience?
So in terms of animal welfare, what is giving you the most hope right now?
I think the shift in public attitude is what is really exciting me. We started doing Facebook Live, I'm thinking it was probably a year or better ago, and it's been really, really interesting. I'll walk around for about an hour usually every night and just talk. You know, whatever cat comes up, we'll talk to the cat, we'll talk about the cat, we'll talk to the keepers. And in the course of people asking questions, I hear more and more people asking, well, why is that animal in a cage? And how big is that cage? And things that people never used to ask before, because they just wanted to see them in cages. And now they're like, I don't know, this might be wrong. And it's so good to see people challenging the idea of these animals in cages at all. So I really feel regenerated, recharged, that people are getting it and that the message is getting out there. And I can't help but think that our entire planet, despite some of its issues, it's really going through a change in enlightenment that is just thrilling to witness.
I see that happening too. And I do think that social media is helpful in that regard. I mean, with all of its troubles and complications, it is showing us some of the things that are happening and helping us educate ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Carol Baskin, is there anything else you'd like to add? Is there any message that you'd like to share with people before we close?
I think the only thing I would add is that I have seen so many people who came to visit Big Cat Rescue because of some great loss in their life, a loss of a loved one, a loss of a pet, and something drew them here that they felt like there was some reason why they needed to come here, and they weren't sure what it was. And yet what I frequently hear them tell me, because they tell me this afterwards, what I frequently hear them tell me is, I came here thinking that this would be a place of healing where I could just reconnect to nature and wildlife. And I stood in front of, and you can fill in the blank, that tiger, that leopard, that jaguar, that bobcat. They'll say, I stood in front of that, and they'll name the cat and say, and I saw God. And it just, it gives me chills every time somebody says that to me, because it happens so frequently. And I think we can all see God in each other and in these magnificent animals if we just stop and shut down all of that chatter in our brain and listen
to nature. I agree, that is such a beautiful message. Thank you so much for your time today. And I also want to thank our listeners. Thank you. And I want to encourage everyone to go to your website at bigcatrescue.org and find out a lot more information there. It's such an informative, beautiful website. And I want to say you've been listening to Creating Sanctuary for Animals, and I'm your host, Yolanda Calderon, and I look forward to talking with you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.